Good morning, everyone, and welcome to the New Media Show. I'm here with Rob Greenlee, my co-host, and as you can see, the upper square is empty. Our guest today, Rick Calvert, either has been delayed or we've missed an appointment or something, but irregardless, just you and I this morning, Rob, at least for the time being. Good morning.
Well, it's great to be here, Sunday morning. Gray in Seattle, but the sun is coming.
Yes, it is. And
I see a new Laura Third there, sir.
Yes, there is. And actually, I've got to make a few tweaks to it, but a new lower third. I thought it was actually, I did a little contest on my other show to ask my listeners to submit their ideas. And one of our listeners, Sam Garcia out of Albuquerque, New Mexico, sent that in. So yes, we have an official new lower third. So exciting.
Yes, that is. It looks good.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, one thing I have to start this right off and talk about, Rob, is the Chromecast announcement earlier in the week. And matter of fact, let me grab something here. I was Johnny right on the spot and ordered one and basically got this thing already. And I've been doing some experiments. Typically, this is what it looks like. Just a little itty-bitty fob with a PowerPoint in the back so that you have to hook it up to power. And then you can hook it up to your set or basically put it into a brick. But I thought to myself, okay, I got it working on my TV. Now can I run it through one of my converters? I have some Blackmagic Design HDMI to SDI converters because I'm thinking, oh, maybe I can put this right up on the screen. And no.
It doesn't work that way.
The Blackmagic Design box does not like this thob. So I've got the some engineer friends of mine who are all getting them. They're going to tell me. They've got like assortments of those little bricks like I have, and they're going to tell me which manufacturer. Sometimes it's just finding the right manufacturer because maybe it's looking for some signal or something in there. But my first experience with this thing was immediately had it on my television set. Television was like, boom. I mean, it took like a minute and a half to set it up. And then immediately, of course, you got to have the latest browser from Chrome version 28. And then you have to have, I think on my Chromebook, it came pre-installed, but I think on my laptop, I had to actually add the extension. But long story short, the, what I was able to do is, go right to my website, and the Gadget Professor had just posted an episode. I pressed play on his show. And then I went up and select Chromecast, and it transferred immediately to my television, and I could watch in living color, full 1920 by 1080, the Gadget Professor on my big screen. And I mean, it was like basically a two-step play and then send to Chromecast. So it works for podcasting.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's great that such a simple device can be used across so many tablets and phones and all the stuff like that. I think it's really a breakthrough of sorts. Though truth be told, that technology of screen sharing and stuff has been around for a long time, and other companies, you know, Apple and Microsoft, and have been plowing the way for that kind of technology for quite a while now. But it looks like that this Chromecast is an elegant solution that's certainly inexpensive.
I think the inexpensive part is probably the most important part. With the cost being the way it is, I think, what have I got in this? $35. You know, so, you know, but you know, if you think about what the price line, you look at a Roku, $100, Apple TV, $100, this $35, and it works across all platforms. And I think it's going to be some, you know, there's going to be some growth pains, but I think the key here where they've really done well, at least the initial introduction to this, is you know, all platforms. You know, you can be on your iOS, you can be on your Chromebook, you can be on your Android. I don't know if it'll ever come to Windows Phone, but
yeah, it's in Windows. So if you have a tablet,
right,
on like a Windows 8 tablet, it'll work with it. It's just Windows Phone piece. They haven't built an app for that.
And I'm sure someone will do it because they released all the API and SDKs on how to make it talk to everything. So someone will get it jury-rigged up. But but at the same time, I got a review unit for Nexus 7 sent, and it's a lot lighter, a lot lighter. And I think that was the thing I noticed, you know, because I've got a Nexus 7 sitting here, and, you know, weighing the difference. This is the old version. The new version, you know, and you can just completely feel, I'm like, wow, what a huge difference. But
yeah, and it kind of makes you wonder, I mean, you know, with so much push towards battery life that you wouldn't see a big drop in that. So I'm sure that they don't have a smaller battery in there. So that means that they've cut down on the thickness and the weight of other components.
Yeah, potentially. Yeah. But, you know, here's the thing. It's got a, you know, much beefier screen, you know, from from a pixel standpoint.
Yeah, and that's right.
You know, so I actually found my the office, you can't, you know, the studio, you can't tell, but I went through the studio yesterday and cleaned everything up. And, you know, because I live here in Hawaii, we have this notorious red dirt problem, and you can have a sterile room and still within about 2 weeks you get this nice layer of, you really can't see it, but when you run a towel over it with some Windex or something on it, you can get this red tint of red. So I went through and cleaned everything here in the studio and found my power cord to my Windows RT.
Oh, really? No kidding.
It's
buried
been,
under the red dust.
It's
right?
been missed. No. Well, it's been missing. And I, you know, like, and I had actually went on Amazon and ordered a replacement. So I'm going to have two power plugs for my Windows 8 RT. And so I fired that at my wife. So where did that come from? I'm like, that's been sitting on the shelf since December.
Oh, geez.
She's like, oh, can I use that? Yeah, here you go. So she was using it last night, which is kind of funny.
Yeah, so that red dust is probably iron, right? It's rust.
Yeah.
From the volcanoes that erupt in Hawaii, it's really dense, I'm sure, in iron. So that's probably why they're red.
And we have a housing development going on this way. So we end up getting, you know, when we first moved in here, it was really bad because the housing development was just across the street. And now it's like 100 times better than what it was. I mean, before it was horrible, but like it permeates everything. So you had a family reunion yesterday with the Greenlee clan, I guess, for a better word.
Yeah, that's true. We did. Out on the deck, actually, I live streamed it through my drop cam. The whole event. So, you know, there's relatives around the country that couldn't actually make it, but they could virtually attend.
Well, that's cool. Do you have a little chat room set up for them where they can make comments? Or?
No, I didn't actually. And I had the audio part of it turned off. So
so if you're talking about someone, they couldn't hear you. Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. So I had a little bit of new media going on in my Greenlee reunion yesterday.
That's funny. You know, I had a my wife has a friend, and she has a son who basically is confined to a bed and requires 24/7 health care, and she's getting ready to move to Japan and take her sons with her, and they've got better long-term care in Japan. She can get him hospitalized and basically in a facility that can take care of him, so she doesn't have to be there 12 hours a day. There's a certain amount of family requirement that's still involved there, but she is real nervous because she has to leave him alone for a few days when she goes to Japan to actually get things arranged. She got to find a place to live and get the, you know, she's already got things with the hospital worked out, but she's going to go inspect and all this stuff. And so she's got to leave him in the care of nurses 24 hours a day while she's gone. And she's got one regular full-time nurse that she loves and she's basically not worried about. But this other nurse is coming in. She really doesn't know. So she's not really super technically inclined. So she asked my wife, can I set up a camera or something so I can check in on him? And I had a couple of extra ones. So I took her over a D-Link camera that basically will stream 24/7 for her and take pictures. And we got that set up for actually last week. And so she's off to Japan, I think tomorrow, and she'll have her camera up. So all our girlfriends are going to run watch. They're basically going to, you know, take turns and checking in during the times like she would be sleeping or something like that. So it's kind of one of these, you know, there's not a lot you can do besides, you know, call the house and ask what's going on. But I guess it's kind of cool that you're able to do this these days.
Yeah, it is. I think, you know, and it's going to become more and more useful in a lot of things. I mean, for security, I know there was a big news story here in the Seattle area, or on the mainland anyway, about some woman that was on vacation and had like 3 or 4 drop cams around her house. And she was able to, since this old drop cam, you know, it's kind of like a DVR. It actually records all your video. She found this burglar was in her house robbing her. Oh. And he didn't notice that the camera was there pointing at him. And so he was like almost like looking right into the camera, and all nice. She did was take a screenshot and send it to the police, and had this guy arrested within like, you know, a couple of hours.
That's so awesome. Some of those will send an alert when they see movement. Some of them will actually.
Yeah, well, that's exactly what this does. I mean, it actually will record or give you a little mark in a timeline that something happened on the screen. So you can scroll back through the DVR recording and find all of the points where there was movement on the screen.
I've got security cameras here. I think
I think I think you mentioned that.
The total is like 18 or something like that. Anyway, so it's they're everywhere. And we had our yard guy that is no longer employed by us. He was at the house several months ago and working on the place while we were gone. And we saw a couple of actions that basically the neighbor alerted me, and I went back and looked at the security cameras. And basically he had done some things that made me a little bit wary. So he is no longer in our service. And basically because of what we observed on the cameras. And it's kind of funny because when someone comes up with the delivery guys and stuff, you know, that's all normal. But we have a Seventh-day Adventist that's not Seventh-day. It's the Mormons. They're close. They have
the Latter-day Saints. Yeah.
So the LSE. Yeah. They have a tabernacle or whatever they called it close to us. So there's always the two that are on their rounds. They're always, it's funny, you know, they're very cognizant of those cameras. You can see them looking at the cameras whenever they approach the house. And it is funny too, when people realize that there's cameras, that there's a different, many times they won't come through the gate where they would have before. So it's kind of fun to watch the reactions on replay.
Well, I think it's pretty safe to say that we're coming into a time when everything is being watched and recorded and on video, and it's quite a different time. I know that's been going on in Europe for a long time. I know in London there's probably more cameras in London than anywhere else in the world, right?
Yeah.
So and I also been playing around this week with Elite Motion.
Oh, how'd that work out?
It's been okay. I think you have to have a pretty powerful computer, a pretty new computer, to really take advantage of all of the functions of it. I have an older desktop PC that I'm using here, but it's a 4-core kind of system, but really I think to get the best kind of performance out of it, you need to have probably a Core i7.
Really?
Yeah, I think that much that's juice, the best thing. Yeah, and it's capable of running USB 3. So that'll actually give you, you know, a lot more throughput of data going back and forth to this thing.
Do they actually have USB 3 computers out now?
Yeah, actually, most of the computers I know, I just bought a new Dell all-in-one for my wife, Dana, and it's got, I think it's got four USB 3 ports in it, and it has, I think, another two or three USB 2 ports. Yeah, I don't even know why they put USB 2 ports on them anymore, because the USB 3 ports are backwards compatible, so, but I guess they still do that. But I've been playing around with the it's called Touchless, which is a app that Elite Motion made that will work with Windows to make the Windows UI kind of usable with gestures.
Gotcha.
So, and it's still really early for that. It seems to work really well, but it really is focused on, I mean, it can do like multi-finger touch kind of situation. So it sits like right in front of my monitor. So I just put it straight down, and then I just put my hands out in front of it, like, you know, basically like this, or I use a pointer and I can like point to things on the screen. So, and then if I want to click on something, I just either flick my finger forward or go forward, you know, like that. I mean, like I'm reaching out for it. So it's almost like a virtual touchscreen. So I don't know that this has a lot of new media or implications, but
that's cool.
But it is, yeah, I mean, it is a new thing. But one thing it didn't do very well with the Windows is this kind of like scrolling from the right. So like on the touchscreens today, you basically touch the corner of it and you scroll like this.
Yeah.
To pull up the charms menu or pull up other navs and stuff. It doesn't recognize this gesture yet.
Hmm.
Which I was really hoping that it would. It's probably coming. It only really is very, very precise in like finger gestures. So like, you know, your single digit, or if you have two digits where you can kind of move on the screen and touch things and activate things. So it's very precise. It isn't like a Kinect, which is, you know, you had your hand up like this and you were doing big, broad gestures. It's actually just the opposite of that.
Well, that's cool.
Yeah.
Well, you know, one thing I was going to mention, we did get a couple of emails, or actually, I think one or two emails in this past week. I don't know if I think you were CC'd on those. And got some good feedback on the show, so we appreciate folks that had sent those in. One thing that I did get, Rob, was got an email from a listener. It's on my other show, and this might be a good thing for us to answer him here. And basically, it's from a gentleman by the name of Leonard. He says, when I retire from federal service, I'll start my own podcast. I'm not asking for a personal reply, but I have a suggestion for an article. Please explain to us what sort of numbers we need to produce to make a set amount of money, i.e. $30,000 a year. Also, please explain to us how use is measured. If I get 1.4 million page views a year from my podcast site per server statistics, excluding bots, but WordPress and Google Analytics include that I do a lot less, why is there a difference? And also, there are articles out there that will explain let's see here. It says, I believe that many of us would move from hobby to serious if we knew that the parameters, if we knew what the parameters were to monetization. Right now, my assumption is that my future personal podcasting efforts, green screen video daily news summation of crime and justice and Google Plus discussions all hosted on YouTube will be a hobby simply due to the difficulty of building an audience. So I think we need an article addressing the rules, guidelines of monetization in podcasting. If you do the article, please do not use my name. Again, I deeply appreciate our conversation and guidance. So basically, Eva talks about having to make $30,000 a year. So, you know, that's not a small number when you're first starting out a podcast. And I don't think something that's readily attainable in the very short term, unless you become a, you know, overnight success. But let's just look at it from a money standpoint. That's $2,500 a month is what you have to hit to hit $30,000 a year. So if we just do $2,500 a month, and oh, here comes Rick.
Oh, is that Rick? Okay.
Yeah. So if you look at $2,500 a month and you divide that by, let's use a CPM rate of 15. That's 166. If we times that by 1,000, I know what this number's already going to be. That's roughly, you have to do 100 and, is that right? 166,000. That's the size of your audience. It's going to have to be 166,000 people in order to, that's on a single episode.
Yeah, I was saying that's on a single episode.
Yeah, so if you divide that by 8 episodes, yeah, technically you got to have an audience about 21,000 people. I see Rick, you're trying to come in. Rick, good morning.
Hey guys, sorry. Rick.
That's okay. Yeah, we've been just talking about other new media stuff going on, you know, like the Chromecast and things like that. So it's been good.
But
it's good to have you on. Yeah.
And
my wife got sick yesterday, pretty sick, and that's why I was late. I apologize for that.
Oh, no worries.
That's okay.
So, everyone, that we got Rick Calvert from New Media Expo that has joined us at nmxlive.com. Rick and you and I just talked a couple of days ago, but how's things going and getting prepared for the show? That's you know, it's hard to believe it's only like less than 5 months away.
Oh, Todd, don't scare me.
That's right. Yeah. That was a good answer. Like that.
Well, anyway, yeah, we've been working on it for a few months already, and things are starting to come together. We've announced our first group of podcast speakers last week. Cliff kind of informally on Twitter, and we'll be doing a formal post here this week about that. And then obviously you and I had a conversation a couple of days ago, confirm what we talked about at the show, at the podcast awards last year, or this year, I guess, January. So yeah, stuff's coming together.
And you also are involved. You got some other shows going on too. So you, you've spread your wings quite a little bit and are doing some additional stuff. Yeah.
Yeah.
All new media related, but yes, definitely. So yeah, we've got a show coming up in August, the first week of August in New York, the Small Business Summit, and then September in Atlanta with the Social Shakeup, and then October in Dublin with a Travel Blog Exchange. And then we have this little New Media Expo show coming up in January.
Well, don't do what a buddy of mine did in Dublin when he went recently and partaked in too much alcohol and ended up in an incident in a taxi cab that landed him in the Huskow and ended up costing €2,000 to clear up.
Oh, wow. Really?
Yeah. You know, you have to remember that the alcohol content in the beer over there is not necessarily what it is in the United States.
It's a lot higher, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't plan on doing that. We were going to take a little vacation afterwards, obviously being in Dublin, but, My wife's pregnant and she's due in November, so It's just going to be a quick over, do the show, and come home for me. So,
no, congratulations.
Thank you.
So I can understand maybe why your wife wasn't feeling good. That that time sucks for them.
Yeah,
sucks for you too.
That's all right. Hey, it's a great thing, obviously. So.
Just before you dialed in, I was going over an email from a gentleman who's getting ready to retire from his job, and he's wanting to start a podcast. And he was asking me, you know, what's it going to take me to make $30,000 a year with my show? And we had basically said that, you know, you're going to have an audience that's about at least 100, if it's a single episode a month, around 160,000. Or if you divide that into 8 episodes a month, around 20,000. And then a full-time advertiser, obviously, to make that happen. Or maybe 2 advertisers with half the audience size. So not unattainable numbers, but definitely something that this gentleman would have to work at, especially if he's just getting started. I think, Leonard, the thing to think about, and just to finish up your email here, is that you need to look at this from a 2 to 3 year standpoint. You know, at a minimum 2 years to really, you know, 1 year to get your land legs on not doing the show, and then another year to, you know, take, you know, you've got your land legs doing your show, then to build your audience, and then you just got to build the numbers, and with your content is going to be kind of niche-y, so you're going to have to even work harder to build that audience to get enough. The volume there to, but you can start making money pretty early in the process if you're starting to build, you know, decent numbers.
It's not like one day you're going to start making $30,000 a year. It's going to be something that's slowly going to build over time. I mean, you're going to make $100 and then you're going to make $200 and then $400. And it's just like you say, it's going to take multiple years to build. That's exactly what I did with my radio show. I didn't start out making money. I was paying money. And then slowly but surely you just build an audience and you start going after advertisers and you start pitching them and things start happening once you hit a certain level. And you just got to do a lot of online marketing and offline marketing and get the word out and try and reach your target audience as best as you can. There's no guarantee you're ever going to get 160,000, but you may get, you know, 50, 60, 70,000. And that may be enough to spark a higher CPM too than maybe what we're thinking. So I think the opportunity is there for anybody to actually do this. It's just how committed. You have to think of it as just like a regular business that you're serious about, that you're going to rely on. I know, Todd, you jumped in with both feet yourself. You know exactly what I'm talking about. You have to commit.
Yeah, and you know, and then when I started doing the show, I basically gave it 2 years to be, first of all, to break even and be making money. That was my goal, was just to break even and be a on the plus curve, and you know, I was pretty fortunate and able to do that in about 10 months or so. So it, you know, it was.
That's, Todd, you know, I think as both of you guys know, I mean, that's not typical, right?
No.
A lot of people can work at it a lot longer than that before they get to making any kind of money, let alone breaking even.
That's true.
And I heard you running the numbers when I came on. Are either one of you familiar with a guy named John Lee Dumas, Entrepreneur on Fire podcast?
No.
Yeah. No, I am. Sure.
So he does his podcast every single day, Todd.
Oh.
So that'll fix your numbers a little bit, I guess.
Well, you know, and the thing is, though, you know, I've seen, you know, you look at Andy McCaskey from SDR News. He did 6 days a week. And frankly,
too much content.
It's not sustainable. It's sustainable for the first couple of years, but you think about a daily commitment to do a show. That, you know, if I had any advice to somebody trying to do that, don't be afraid to call uncle when you need to scale back. And you have to take breaks. You just, you know, Andy took no breaks, and he got to the point where he essentially burned himself completely out. Instead of going down from 6 to 5 to 4 to 3,
he
just shut it down. And, you know, so it's, you know, I don't ever recommend anyone doing it 7 days a week. If he can do it, more power to him. Is he single?
Yeah.
And no, he's not. I don't know. Oh. He's not.
Well, if he's like the guy that we talked to last week, who basically said that he was spending as much two times the amount of time editing as he was recording, hopefully he's not too anal on the editing part and he can get out from underneath it once he's done. You know, that's the challenge,
right?
Like
Leslie Samuel says, you know, just record it, no post editing, and just go.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, some people can't do that. Their personalities don't allow it.
Yeah, or their speech capabilities are not really to that level either. There's a lot of people that edit because of they're not perfect speakers, so they trying to improve that. So yeah, I mean most people are like that. There's just the rare, you know, person that can speak without any flaws. You know,
I don't know if either one of you guys give this advice, but something that I'm always telling people is to look at traditional media and model yourself after that. So in podcasting, for me, it's traditional radio. And you look at guys who do a show 5 days a week. They come on at the same time every single day. They're always there. You know, that consistency makes a big difference.
Oh, it does.
And being professional. And like you said, Todd, you can't do it every day. But if you're not there, then you've got to have a guest host ready to do it for you. So your audience is, you know, something's always happening for your audience. I just think it's so important. I think that so many new media creators could learn by just paying attention as a business person to traditional media, the way they work.
Yeah, I think where the distinction lies is that a lot of people that we're talking to are starting out as almost like hobbyists. So this is not a full-time thing. So they're trying to hold down a day job, plus they're trying to do this. It's just not practical for them to be able to do it on a daily basis. I mean, those radio guys like you're talking about, those guys are getting paid to be in the radio studio every day, you know. Yep. So they're basically committed to that. They're getting paid to be there, and they can do it. So it's a little bit like comparing apples and oranges there, unless you are full-time in what you're doing in a business that you can do that, right? But most podcasters really are not in a position to be able to devote full-time effort to their show. So it just becomes a part-time thing that they're doing. And just like Todd says, it's just – and that's kind of what Andy was trying to do. Andy was working a full-time job, plus he was trying to do this too for part of that time, and it just burned him out.
You know, and I just also think that the content has to be pretty compelling to do 7 days a week. If it's short and quick, it probably is fine to do that. Yeah. But long format like this, I don't know if I could do. I could do my regular show 5 days a week, no problem. But it would go. I would scale it back to 45 minutes. But you know, even I, the amount of time that I take. Even to do my show, let's look at the realities. I usually start show prep about anywhere between 5:30 and 6. I go live at 8 to 8:15. I finish 9:15 to 9:30. I'm usually done with all my, you know, basically the initial show notes, the audio file, and stuff is usually up by 10:30. And, you know, basically stuff is uploading by 11. So really 5 hours, you know, 5 hours to do an hour, 15 minute show. And why do I do it? Why do I record my show at night? Well, you know, got wife, kids, I've got a business that I'm trying to make sure we make payroll on, you know, all that stuff that goes on during the daytime. There's just no way I could dedicate 5 hours during the morning or even in the early afternoon. I'm still dealing with people in LA. It would be tough. It really, really would. So,
Well, I guess my bigger point, by the way, Todd, that's a really important thing people don't think about is the pre-show prep, the post-show, mm-hmm. if you're editing and all that sort of stuff. But just the consistency, even if you're only one day a week.
Right.
Yeah. You can't be like me 30 minutes late to the call. You've got to be here.
Right.
On time. And another point you made is all that work you do. You know, a friend of mine I look at in the radio business, Hugh Hewitt, he's got 3 full-time guys helping him produce that show too. Right. It's not just him, you know, being the on-air talent. There's a producer and there's assistant producer and there's an engineer. Yep. And then he's got interns for call screeners.
Yep.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm watching the chat room. I'm doing the switching, making sure the audio recording is going. Make sure YouTube's still live. Yeah, it's you become a, you know. And one thing I will say is, if a content creator is doing video, though, it makes I really in doing the live part. I think is for me, it really made me step up to the next level because I was getting lazy, you know, and when you are live, you have to have a little bit more show prep, and you're forced to get better, you know, forced to get better over time. So, one thing I wanted to, we talked a little bit about it, before you came on, Rick, but, the announcement about the Chromecast this week, any thoughts on what, Google announced?
Honestly, I don't even know.
So you're out of the loop then when they announced their little dongle here, huh?
Yeah, what is it?
Well, you plug it into your HDMI port on your TV. You connect it to, through a pretty slick little interface to the Wi-Fi to your house. And right now there's three apps, Netflix, YouTube, and what's the other one? There's one other app that's already been pre-programmed. But basically, if you load Chrome version 28, or at least the most recent version of Chrome, 28 above, you can go to my website or anybody's website that has video. You can start playing the video, and there's a little tab in the right-hand corner of Chrome that says Send to Chromecast, and you send it to Chromecast via Wi-Fi, and basically, you can watch the video full screen on your television and keep on surfing the internet with your laptop.
Awesome.
You don't have to. It's not streamed through your laptop. It's actually streamed through the device. So you have to have a good Wi-Fi signal for it.
So it's like another device, Wi-Fi device inside your home. It's like having another laptop or whatever.
Yeah, and essentially what they've done here is and they priced it at $35. Is they make it easy for you to share content. And they,
you buy it?
Amazon, you can do it through the Play Store. I think they're sold out. I think they sold 1.7 million units in 2 days.
Yeah, wow. They had it in Best Buy, but the inventory lasted only a couple of days, and they're out of stock even at Best Buy now.
So I'm guessing you'll be able to get it at Radio Shack and any kind of normal electronics store.
Yeah, I think eventually.
My first impression, awesome for new media content creators.
Yeah.
We just watched a marathon of Orange is the New Black yesterday. Everybody's been talking about it. And, you know, we watched like 7 episodes yesterday. And this obviously is going to make it easy for any kind of online video producer to get more viewers.
Well, you know, the first thing I did is we had them, had some FedExed in, and immediately the developer that works on our Android app, called him. I said, you've got work immediately. How's your weekend? And so we're going to very rapidly roll this out so it's native on our website, so that when you come to the website via, and also in our app, so that when you go to our app and you're playing a video of a video podcast, that it'll be right there in the app. You'll be able to click it and send it. And same thing with our websites, and maybe even into our PowerPress plugin. We're trying to figure out how we can incorporate it with that, because it's already in the browser. So you really don't need to do it's. You know, it's if you have a video on your website, it's already ready to go. So long as you're using Chrome. That's the key there, but I think their win point on this is $35 price tag.
So will this, you guys think, eliminate things like the Roku box and stuff like that?
I think it'll compete with them. It may not completely, cause you know, the Roku's got 400 channels or something like that. I think it'll compete. We'll see. And what's interesting is Google's going to continue the Google TV. So there's going to sell the Google TV and this. So what do you think? Do you think they weren't getting as much traction, Rob, with their Google TV, and they had to do something in the?
No, I think it's a completely different product category. I think what this Chromecast is doing is competing directly with AirPlay. And it's competing also with the whole Glass application that's part of Xbox, you know, can do a screen share, so you can control. It's like this second screen TV experience is really what they're playing into here. It's being able to use your tablet or your phone to be your remote control for your TV. But it's not a complete solution, though. If you really think about the Roku and Xbox One and the Google TV are more complete television experiences. This is just to be able to connect to your web content via your tablet and things like that. I don't know that they've made deep connections to other controls around TV function yet. And I think that that's what the Google TV is trying to accomplish, is trying to blend the broadcast TV part with, because I believe that there's some limitations on being able to, I'm not sure. I mean, this is an area I haven't heard anybody talk about is, you know, places like Hulu and places like other apps that are out there that are making available on-demand TV content from the big studios. If there's some way to be able to get content through this device from those folks. I don't believe that's the case. I think those are being locked out.
No. You go to Hulu right on your laptop and play it.
Did you?
Oh, yeah. You just basically you start the Hulu video and then you just send a Chromecast, and this acts as a browser, you know, and it basically takes over the function, but you don't see the browser. You just see the video, you know. You can send the browser to air, but it's really, you know, designed to...
But only apps that have the SDK built into them on your tablet or your phone are capable of using this, right?
No. You just have to have Chrome. And
Okay, Chrome on your device, or does Chrome live?
Chrome lives on your device.
Yeah, okay.
On your laptop.
So you have to have
laptop.
Either playing the content through the web in Chrome, okay,
right.
And that'll push it out. So all those folks that have Hulu accounts and things like that, they can push it as long as they're displaying that content in the browser on their device.
The only way they could block it is to block Chrome. They'd have to block the entire browser. And I don't think that Hulu and the rest of those HBO folks are going to block an entire browser. And it looks, we're already digging deep. Okay, what does this thing smell like? Can I tell that it's coming from Chromecast in the header information? And I'm not going to reveal the secret sauce, but they will have a very tough time blocking this if they try to block it.
So, Todd, as a content creator, can you tell that people are viewing the content via the Chromecast device?
We think so. Angelo's still digging. And if not, though, when we put the – if we cannot, there's ways that we can – how should we say it? In the actual browser, we can actually – basically, when that command is called, there's some stuff we can do in our stat system, we think, to basically drop a flag and said this person initiated a Chromecast call. That's something we want to embed in PowerPress. That way we can get the metric data off this to see how many people are actually going to watch or listen.
So when did you get that in your hand?
I got this, FedEx delivered it Friday.
Yeah, it was just announced, I think, on Tuesday or
something
like that.
Yeah. Angelo got one on Thursday, and I had said, why did you order one? And he'd actually went and ordered two more so that we would have, and I ordered three personally. Here's this living room, bedroom, and then studio. So what I want to do with it is, and what I already tried, is because I love the way they did. When you want to look at the browser, you can still do that. You can send the browser window to your TV. But what I want, and they made it really slick. They take the header data off. You don't see your tabs. You don't see the command line. You don't see any of this stuff. All you see is just the body of the browser and a nice little motif around it. And it looks really good. And I thought, man, this would be perfect. I could simulcast my screen while I'm doing my show on this and then use it as a regular video input to be able to switch in like I switch in that one right there. The only difference is it has the nice motif. And on this one, this video, or I'm using IVGA from NewTek on this, but I could crop this where that header information isn't seen, but then it would scale funny. So,
yeah.
So, but I couldn't get the Blackmagic box to talk to this. So that is going to be a work in progress.
Todd, so does it, I got the impression from the Google presentation, because actually I watched it on my tablet, that it, once you hit that button to do a screen share with your television, that it automatically switches HDMI ports?
That I don't know.
I think I saw it. I think they said that when you click play. So let's say you're watching broadcast TV with your cable, yep, cable connection. I believe that they have hooks in there that once you click play on this Chromecast, it'll automatically switch HDMI ports to the Chromecast.
Well, I'll be looking at that this morning then. I didn't even attempt that.
So you're saying, Rob, that you won't have to go and change that input on your remote for your TV then?
Yep, exactly.
That's
that
great.
I think is like, the, you know, if that is the case, that is the innovation of this, is that ability right there.
So there's a couple of things here that are super important, I think, for content creators. Number one, it's so cheap, so anybody can buy it.
Yep.
Number two, if what Rob just said is true, it removes this kind of technology hurdle that prevents, you know, an average user. We all get caught in the bubble of geekdom sometimes and forget. Some people don't know how to change the input on their television. Yep. This is going to make people consume more online content, no doubt about it. And it will lead them down that path. Rob, you said, you know, it doesn't compete so much with Roku or maybe even the Google TV. But once they've experienced this, they'll say, wait a minute, I can get a Google TV box and I can see even more stuff or do even more fun things. It's leading people down that path.
Brilliant. Part of our marketing stuff that we've done in the past, especially when I have a media buyer that doesn't understand the over-the-top stuff, is we'll send them a pre-configured Roku box with just our channels in it. We'll send it to them and let them load that up and look at our channels in Roku. This could allow us to just send one of these and a link to our app, and they could basically plug this in, load our app, and once we get the hooks in, which we'll have as soon as the coder gets done with it, and he's programming right now, once that's done, then all they have to do is just send to Chromecast, excuse me. So this, you know, I think the key that it's $35 is important, and also makes any dumb TV a smart TV.
Yeah. So, well, that's also a question that I had too. Do all TVs with HDMI ports fully support this? I mean, if you have a 10-year-old TV that has an HDMI port, is it going to work with this, or do you have to have certain, like a TV from the last 2 years or 3 years for it to fully function properly?
The TV.
I don't know that it's been explained part of it. So,
I still have a projection big screen in my living room, a Sony. Mm-hmm. It's probably 6 or 7 years old. It's actually due for replacement. It worked fine with it.
It worked fine. Good.
Yeah, but I loaded the HDMI port. I didn't have it on a different channel, so we'll see if it's. Now, one thing I did notice is that my Samsung in my bedroom, which is newer, recognized it. Actually, came up in the. It actually showed us as an icon as Chromecast in the actual lineup of inputs, which was I thought was interesting. Now my big screen, it was older. All it was just, you know, it doesn't have that fancy stuff on the screen, so it just showed up as a, you know, it was just a normal input. I had to switch it to the input. So yeah, so we'll see how this works.
I have another question, guys. I'm sorry. So this is an HDMI device, because it looks like a USB on their website.
HDMI.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I know you kept HDMI. Saying, because correct. I mean, I don't know if you guys have looked at the device on their website, but it sure looks like a USB.
Well, what they did is you have to power it.
It's about the same size. Yeah.
So it's got a little, it's got a place to plug in a cable. So it's got a USB cable on one side to power it. And you can either plug it into a USB port on your television, or it comes with a cube.
Yeah, so, this is great. So do either one of you know if they're going to be showing this thing at VidCon next week?
If they're there, I'm sure they will.
Yeah.
I can't imagine, you know, I get excited about all of this kind of stuff because I'm, you know, this is what I do. But when I heard it announced, I was like, okay, yeah, take my time. And I like waited like 2 hours. And then when I ordered it, it said, we'll ship on the 28th. And I'm like, huh? What do you mean? Because, you know, everyone else was saying, oh, I'm getting mine tomorrow. And I knew they were selling fast. Actually, I got an email this morning that basically said that it had shipped. And the three that I ordered had shipped. This one came strict from Google. I got that one from Google, which has to actually go back. So my three aren't actually here yet. But the I was going to say is, you know, when I read like Friday that Amazon had sold 700,000 and that Google had sold like 1 million, I was like, whoa, 1.7 million units in like 3 or 4 days. Those some numbers, you know, and if Apple didn't sit up and go, well, you know, this is going to get people's attention no matter what.
Oh yeah.
We'll see if the volume stays up.
I think I'm sure
there's
going to
be a lot of TV studios that are going to be pissed off at Google.
I'm sure.
I'm curious, you guys, I've been telling people. Last year, I think there was a lot of noise made about a new renaissance of podcasting, which I think is absolutely happening right now. You're seeing some big content creators who were maybe bloggers before or even traditional media who are podcasting now in a way they never did before. I think we're on the verge right now of web TV really putting a dent in traditional TV the way that blogs have done over the last decade. I wonder what you guys think about that. And this device, I think, is a symbol of that coming.
Well, I look at the demand for our product. As a matter of fact, we're about ready to announce a brand new product called Raw Voice Certified. And it was largely driven by some of our new customers. ESPN's using our stats. I really said that in this show before, but they're using our stats. Quick and Dirty is using our stats. We have a big company out of the UK that's using our stats now. And they're all looking for media certification. And we're going to launch a new program basically giving our premium users. We feel confident enough now with 8 years of data, 7, 8 years of data, that we can actually put put company on risk to say that, yes, this data is certified. We stand behind it. If you need an affidavit to prove that your numbers are correct, we'll issue that. Basically, we are going to go large and basically say, you know, we have high confidence in our data, which we do, and provide a certification for them. And because what we're finding is that there's the companies that we're working with are finding that their media buyers are raising a standard, having a higher level standard in the data reporting that they're getting, and more transparency. And usually that's an indication, at least to me, on a transparency standpoint, being able to log in and look at, where a show's delivering on a specific day is going to be very critical for media buyers as they're trying to maybe more rapidly respond to the market and change ad campaigns on the fly. So I think so. I think that they are, I think there's more movement, and there's definitely more movement in making sure the data is right. Rob, what do you see on your side?
Well, I think looking at it from a content perspective, I think that the landscape is, I don't believe that the landscape is going to change dramatically. I think podcasting and things have a role to play in the growth of kind of new media per se. But I think that what we're starting to see is the bigger media companies are starting to really start to embrace this more. This has been a common theme that I've had, you know, on my own podcast and talking to others as well. And what I'm seeing in the marketplace is that the big media companies and the cable channels and things like that are using podcasting as almost like a farm league, talent pool to pull from to tap. I mean, I look at Joe Rogan just launched a TV show. Mark Maron just launched a TV show. There's Comedy Bang Bang went from a podcast to a TV show. Adam Carolla's doing. I mean, just go through the list of folks that are using podcasts as a foundation to their new media companies, and then transferring that talent and over to kind of the cable networks and the studios. And I'm seeing a lot of talk also on the broadcast radio side, where they're going to start tapping podcasters for on-air talent more. So you're seeing the kind of this blending of these two worlds happening on the podcast side between broadcast radio and podcasts, and it's going to go back and forth. So broadcast radio talent's going to have podcasts, successful podcasters are going to be on the air, and so you're going to see this blend that's going to happen. It's not like podcasting is going to kill the big media companies or anything. It's going to be cross blended and it's going to be something new that comes. It's not going to be one or the other.
Well, I think it's a really important point you made there, Rob. So many new media content creators and people in the new media business say, you know, we're going to kill traditional media. That's just dumb.
Yeah.
But we're definitely going to change them significantly. And it already has happened in print. You can ask a whole bunch of journalists who are out of jobs right now because of new media. And that's what I'm talking about here with television. It's going to make them be smarter. It's going to make them be better. They're going to have to compete with guys who have significantly smaller budgets and significantly less resources are now going to be able to compete on their level. Netflix is kind of a good example of that trend. And as you guys have said, you know, you see what Mark Maron's done and Adam Kroll and some other guys, that blending in the video space is happening. I think this device is definitely a harbinger of what's coming.
Yeah, I think what it's also driving is that they have fought the integration of this media for a while. You know, it's not any easier to get into a cable box than it was 5 years ago. It's still, the barrier to entry is very high, very expensive, very legal intense. Believe me, we tried. We tried to get into and have our own channel, have our own set-top box, place, not a set-top box, but be in be channel 862. But the cost to do so is just incredibly high. And we said, screw it. We don't need it. And I think what we've got with the devices and continue to be devices like this, like the Roku, the Apple TV, who's know what's Apple's next swing at the bat's going to be. It's all towards providing media. Now, here's the difference between what, and this is where I think where Microsoft is making a mistake. The barrier to entry to the Xbox is it's the golden goose that laid the golden egg. You're not getting in there. It's nearly impossible to get into the Xbox. It's easy to get into the Roku. It's easy to get into Chromecast. It's easy to get on the Apple TV. Whether or not they open that up to apps at some point, I don't know, but people still can get to my content there. They have a very difficult time getting my content via the Xbox because, you know, Microsoft and Apple have, and Google, they all have stock holders. But I think Google understands the power of this and the apps and the whole ecosystem to drive the Google brand. So we'll see. But, you know, some of the companies haven't been as nice as others in helping us. You know, Rob Fight, I'm sure, and I don't want to put Rob on the spot, but, you know, why doesn't Microsoft have a, you know, besides what they have already, why don't they support new media more? It just kills us. It kills me, you know.
Yeah.
It's all Rob's fault, obviously.
Yeah, it's all my fault.
No.
I was actually thinking about that just the last couple of days. I was really thinking about how Google has YouTube and Apple has a significant podcast presence, and Microsoft does have a podcast area, which is open to you know, online media creators more, but it's not as supported as Google has supported YouTube or Apple has supported the podcast area. And if you really back up and you think about it, there really isn't any other place in the Microsoft ecosystem that supports online content providers really in any significant way that's captured a large, you know, kind of market. The podcast area for many years was kind of sitting second place to iTunes. I don't believe that that's the case anymore. I think it's fallen pretty far over the last couple of years for a lot of reasons that are probably pretty obvious. But it's something that I've been after Microsoft to open up about since probably mid-2000s. Just as podcasting started, I was very vocal before I went to work there about the company, you know, kind of embracing this new medium, and they were very resistant to that even back then. And then Zune came out, and some new people were brought into the company that had a more open perspective on what was possible in that area, and that's why the podcast area was birthed. But then when Zune kind of faded away, and a lot of those folks that had that vision physically left the company. I mean, a lot of the folks that created the Zune brand and the ecosystem that existed that birthed the podcast area are no longer at Microsoft. So and the company is very much has a strong history, good or bad, of being very, very supportive of big media and other large companies, and so that's I think where the distinction lives between and Google and Microsoft is Google is more about enabling people to contribute. I mean, you just look at what they're doing with you know, with YouTube and what they're doing with these live video chats, you know, that are currently optional. I don't believe that Microsoft would ever make that type of functionality available. It's just not part of their culture. So it's a issue that I've been kind of fighting against for years and years to try and get the podcast area better supported, and it just hasn't been a priority to the company. And I don't know that that's ever going to change. I don't know that's going to be something that's going to be a priority to them. I know that the Xbox One is an important thing for them, and I do know that they do have the desire to have a robust app ecosystem for the Xbox One. How far that goes and what the developer APIs are and the SDK looks like that can enable easily porting apps between, you know, Windows 8, Windows Phone, and Xbox, I think is still a question mark, and I don't really know the answer to it anyway. So it's something that could improve, but I don't know if it will. I think what we see with Microsoft today is things can change, but I don't know. It's certainly not a guarantee that it will change.
Hey Rick.
Yes.
I think that's the headline that says it all. I don't know if you can see that.
1 billion podcast subscriptions, yeah.
You know, their announcement they made on 22nd. Now, is that a big number, you know, from back in 2005? Maybe not, but I think it's a number.
But Todd, also, yeah, it is. I mean, I think it's a big thing, but also realize that the perception is that that's an Apple thing, right? It's not a Microsoft thing, and and there's a lot of folks that in the company that would view that as confirmation that, you know, it's podcasting. It comes from, you know, the pod side of the fence, right?
Not the device you can't name, Rob.
Yeah. Well, that's kind of, I think what we're up against is.
But it's the problem though is people are they need to get over this hang up on this name. It's the name. It's what the community called the content.
Yeah.
Well, I want to ask you a question, Rob, but I want to tell a little story about a woman I talked to at South by Southwest a couple of years ago who worked for Microsoft. And I'll preface that by saying I am
I wouldn't say a Microsoft fanboy. I think Apple is one of the few companies that has this weird cult religion where people love them in a freakish way. You should only love your family. Yeah. But yeah. I'm a fan of Microsoft, and I hate Apple. I hate them. And yeah. For a lot of different reasons, I won't get into at this moment. You know, I've said it on our stage at our show before. I don't think they support new media content creators very much at all, other than they invented this device, which, you know, kind of revolutionized the medium. That was great. It's good business for them.
Right.
But I don't think they care about media content creators at all. And I was sitting at South by Southwest in the blogger lounge, I think it was 3 years ago. And this woman who worked for Microsoft, she in a particular product division, and she's looking around the room and she goes, "This is really sad. It's making me sad." Because I could see her face kind of change at a moment during our conversation. And I said, "What is it?" She goes, "Everybody in this room is using a Mac." Mm-hmm. And I said – and I looked at her and said, "Why do you care? You guys don't make computers. You guys sell software. And who cares if they use it on a Mac or if they use it on a PC or whatever?" And that's a thing I think, you know, it's just culturally at Microsoft, they got to get over. Who cares that people use iPods? You guys have an Xbox and you have some other awesome tools too. But anyway, I want to tell that story because I think it's so important about the mindset. But my question for you, Rob, I think people on the new media side, again, we say these things that are so adversarial, like new media is going to kill traditional media. That's dumb. Mm-hmm. You know, why doesn't Microsoft or why doesn't Apple help us? I think we should be asking ourselves, what can we do to help you? Rob, you know, I kid you a little bit, but I know you're the guy in Microsoft who's been evangelizing for new media for years. Like you said, even before you were there.
Right.
Mm-hmm. What can we as new media content creators do to help you evangelize with inside the business to let them realize, wait a minute, there's opportunity for us here by helping them? Because Microsoft also has this culture of helping new startups. I know they have these incubators for helping startup businesses.
Yeah.
How do we get them to think about new media content creators that way?
Yeah. It's difficult. I know there's been some efforts in that regard here over the last couple of years of trying to rally the community to raise awareness to this need. And I believe that there's a lot of people out there that would like to see a really robust solution from the company. It's very difficult to move the needle on that kind of thing. It has to come from like the corporate VP level, Steve Ballmer or whatever, to be a priority for the company. And it's probably not going to come from the lower ranks of the company just because it's all about risk, right? Nobody wants to stick their neck out that far. And it's not necessarily a Microsoft issue. It's more of just a people issue, right? It's around perceptions and what people have in their jobs, what they've been assigned to work on. And I mean, at the end of the day, it becomes very practical. You know, there's this momentum that happens in the company around music and video and games and areas that have big teams, right, working on these areas. And here podcasts, there is no team there for podcasts. There's a little bit of a team in the Windows Phone side, but I'm basically a one-man band at the company that's managing an area of the company that's part of the Xbox ecosystem. But I'm like one person. I mean, you look at music and they have like maybe 500 people working on music. And it's kind of like trying to move the needle on something that it's very, very difficult to do. You know, I've been really focused on really trying to keep the whole podcast area kind of alive and functional and relevant. Really in the face of the whole Zune brand going away and not being a part of Xbox, really. So I keep the drive alive and I keep pushing and I keep – but at the end of the day, you know, at some point it's like, you know, the company is going to decide, you know, whether they're going to continue or not. The problem is I haven't been able to get them to commit to anything greater, right? So it's a challenge.
Yeah, and I think what it boils down to is that if there was money to be made, Rick, Let's be honest, they would be all over it, but I don't think they see any money to be made.
I absolutely agree, Todd. And by the
way, that's a big part of it. You're right.
Their business, and that's what they should worry about. Their job is to sell products.
But at the same time, they may sell more products if they were more inclusive.
Well, that's again my question back to us as new media content creators. You know, what can we do to help Rob and whoever his allies may be with inside, and not just Microsoft, by the way, Rob, we're directing this at you, I think, because you're here. By the way, Todd, there's nobody here from Apple, right?
That's right.
And there never has been. There.
Yeah.
But what do we do as new media content creators to help them understand, hey, there is money to be made here? And we should also be realistic. You know, I said earlier, I see this as a change, as that new video is going to start hurting traditional video financially, and I believe that. But it's not going to happen overnight.
No.
Still, we're talking about years, maybe decades. And as content creators, we need to be realistic to say, okay, today we're going to educate some people inside these big businesses on here's an opportunity for them to build the next Chromecast device or whatever that iteration might be. And then get they have brilliant people working there that can help. Because what do we want? We want distribution, right? We want audience. How do we get those companies to help bring us audience to our content and make both of us money? And
Well, Rick, I mean, one piece of what you're saying, I mean, it's, you would think that these areas would be very kind of user driven, right? So you have what people want is what these companies will build for us. And one of the breakdowns that's happened, and it happened in the past, is, well, what's that method of communication from the kind of user community, the content providers, to the companies to create what they would like, right? And the problem you get back into is the priorities of the corporation and the company don't always 100% align with what their users want, because of legal restrictions and problems that they have around technology. And I mean, it's definitely a challenge. Now, the only way that I know that the community can influence Microsoft is by expressing themselves to the company directly about what they want. And you know, it's the same issue that exists today in politics, right? If we want to change Congress, right, in what they're doing, we all need to step up and make our voices heard and tell them what we want and force the issue. I don't know that strategy necessarily works in corporate environments, because corporations are not democracies, right? They're led from the top, and I'm not sure that it's quite the same, but in a lot of ways, they do want to create products that people will buy, right? At the end of the day, and if more people want to buy a product based on their podcasting support, then they're more likely to build that capability into the platform. But they need to be shown that there's a low amount of risk in making that choice. And the only way that they can have a lower amount of risk is to have a popular uprising that tells them that, yeah, we'll buy Windows phones if it has podcast support. The challenge that the company has is they haven't been able to be assured that that's the case. So that's the whole kind of backstory on that. And I would hope that there's something that can be done, but it's possible that there isn't anything that can be done.
You know, and I'll be honest, I'm at the point where I'm going to be needing a new desktop computer in the next, I thought it was going to be sooner than later, but I breathed a little more life into the unit I have. And I'm contemplating for the very first time, you know, do I go with another PC? Definitely not Windows 8, but I go with another Windows PC with Windows 7, or do I go with a Mac? And if someone had told me 5 years ago that I'd been contemplating buying a Mac, I'd have told them they were out of their mind. Because
well, guys, yeah, Todd, I mean, keep in mind when Windows 8.1 comes out, things are going to get a lot better. The operating system is going to have fixes for most of the issues that people have had. So I think it's going to get a lot better, and I think the next version of Windows will steadily get better. But I mean, it's a valid question, right? Where do you go if you don't use Windows? Do you go to Mac, or do you? I mean, there's really only two choices, I think, yeah. Right?
And so in really the and if I look at how I'm doing stuff today, really the only thing that I heavy lift on my computer anymore is video editing. And where do I do my video editing? On a Mac. Everything else is in the cloud. You know, and I can run Microsoft Office on a Mac. I don't have to run it on a PC. So I, you know, that's my dilemma. I'll probably end up ultimately going with a PC just because it's, you know, it's the thing I'm most familiar to. But, you know, I got an even mix here in the studio of Windows and Macs. And you know, I don't know. I as a new media creator, I'm torn because I feel like, quite honestly, I feel that I've been I'm the ugly stepchild to Microsoft. You know, I don't think they, respect us, and you know, and I think that they have basically thumbed their nose, and because they got their asses bent because it was called podcast, they can't get over it, and. I don't know, maybe I'm wrong. And Rob, it's not fair to you. I know you've been working hard behind the scenes, but it just drives me crazy that they have not, you know, we are, how far along are we now? 2004? We are, you know, we're fast approaching 10 years in the space. It's still called podcast. Get over it. Get over it and get on with it, you know?
Well, I think if you look at what they actually did, they did name it podcast. So it isn't like they like tried to turn it into Zoomcast or some other you know, stupid name. So they did support it. I guess what the challenge is that is it a billion-dollar business? And it's not. But the truth of the matter is neither is music. Music is not a billion-dollar business either to the company. It's actually typically has not been a real profitable area for the company. Of course, all content isn't very profitable, and you know the TV side isn't either. But so I mean, you look at what Apple has done, you know, with iTunes and that kind of stuff, and you can see a model of what works, right? Mostly, it's having all this content ecosystem accessible across all the devices, right? And that's a strategy that I think should be mirrored here. I think it's a proven strategy that works, and so that's what I would hope would happen here over time. But you know, like you say, I mean, people are making decisions, and also, you know, what's going to happen to Android? Is Android going to become a player in this desktop space ultimately? I mean, you start thinking about these hybrid devices, right? Tablets with keyboards, and as these Android tablets become more and more powerful computers, maybe eventually they start carving away some of that productivity desktop space.
Well, I think the television is now the second screen. I see it in my house. The TV is the second screen. Kids are sitting around, they're looking at their smartphones. My wife's with her iPad. And the television is the afterthought, you know, so...
I'll tell you, Todd, last night I was watching, I told you we were watching Orange is the New Black on Netflix, so we're streaming our video, and it was my wife and her two sisters, and every one of us had a mobile device in our hand while we were watching it.
Right.
Every one of us. And none of them are techies. They don't live in my world. They think I'm nuts with this social media stuff. This is definitely mainstream. And I think you're absolutely right that the television is the second device, which, again, you know, you go to CES every year. I think you do too, Rob.
Yeah.
You see the TV manufacturers coming out with new products that just are stupid. Nobody wants them.
3D is dead.
Yeah. Yeah. Nobody cared about 3D. And for how many years at CES were they – every booth, 3D television, 3D television. Our glasses
are just a
cooler
gimmick.
Than the other guy's glasses. Who cares?
Yep. Yeah. Well, I guess it's going to be interesting to see where the space goes. Rick, obviously, they can find a lot about new media, blogging, and web TV at New Media Expo, where content meets commerce. Your dates this year, January 4th to January 6th. And boy, right after the New Year's, hot and heavy. But that date seems to, you know, at some point we're going to get on the calendar is going to change, or we can shift a little bit to the right. But this calendar year's got you right there, hugging the right after New Year's. Yeah. Oh. Please hang up the phone. Man, I think my wife took the filter off the Well, that sucks. Lost them both. She just... I think when the phone rang, I think my wife did some rearranging in the kitchen yesterday. I think she took the filter off the DSL line.
And oh, there, New Media rears its head. We're all slaves to the internet.
Well, my wife did some rearranging in the kitchen yesterday, and I think she took the DSL filter off the telephone. So as soon as it rang, it dropped you guys.
Oh,
oh man, that sucks. I'm gonna have to go find that thing. Anyway, I was gonna say, Rick, you've got your show January 4th through the 6th. So what, any big things that you can initially say? What's happening?
Couple of big things. Well, the podcast awards again we'll have back this year, and Todd, Rob, you were both there. You saw what a celebration it was. I mean, we finally got that right, and I think people just loved it. This year, I'm certain it'll be twice as big and twice as good. It was just such a good time. And I know we're going to expand the podcasting track of the show. We're adding a third room to the podcasting track specifically for fiction podcasters. And I know we've got some Vicky Noter's announcements coming up as well, and it'll be our biggest show ever. So we're looking forward to it.
So make sure you get registered. If you register earlier, it's cheaper. Look online; you can find some codes in a variety of places to save a little money on the any codes that you're promoting right now, Rick, that you can say.
As a matter of fact, I will have an announcement for you guys next week. So we'll have a special code just for podcasters where they can still register at the early bird price. So we'll announce all of those podcasting speakers all at once, a formal announcement about the podcast awards, and a special code for podcasters where they can get the early bird price still, even though the price has already gone up.
Oh, cool.
Yep.
Well, Rob, we're already here, believe it or not, at the hour 20:25 mark. Well, any thoughts for Rick or any comments?
Yeah, I just hope that I did notice that you changed the dates of the event. It's actually a day earlier, so you're avoiding less conflict with CES, from what I gather.
Thank you, Rob. That was a good point. Last year, we would have done that too, but they didn't have the dates available at the Rio. But yeah, we definitely noticed when we overlapped with CES for a day, it hurt our attendance. And so this year, our show ends the day before CES starts. So we're happy about that.
Yeah.
Wish we weren't in January, but that's all we, you know, what are we going to do?
Yeah, the whole, you know something, to be honest with you, I wish CES wasn't in January either.
Yeah, I think that there's probably a lot of...
They're in January for a reason. For the consumer electronics business, it makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
Yeah, but there's a lot of electronics manufacturers that would like to have it like late summer or something like that.
Yeah,
it's... and we're still making our plans on what we're going to do at CES this year. We haven't completely locked down what we're doing. We're looking at it, trying to give it a new look and seeing how we're going to execute this year. But I think you're going to see a change from us a little bit. But yeah, look forward to the show, and look forward to coming out and hooking up with folks and And, you know, tell Cliff to keep on cranking. I'm sure he's getting everything locked down on the speakers. So that's going to be exciting to see who all is going to be presenting. And yep. If you guys have comments on today's show, you can send Rob and I an email. You can either send Rob an email at rob@newmediashow.com or todd@newmediashow.com. Either one of those addresses will work. And this is episode 15. Who we got on tap next week, Rob? I think you've got the schedule already locked down.
Yeah, I have Valerie Geller. She's an author and radio industry consultant at beyondpowerfulradio.com and actually at gellermedia.com. And she's just an expert on air talent, kind of like what we were talking about earlier about the transition that's happening with podcasting. This woman goes around and trains talent to be better on air talent on radio. So she's going to give us some great tips on how to improve yourself on your podcast as far as being a host and a talent.
Well, I'm sure she's going to have fun with us.
Yes. That's right. She's having a field day helping us.
Yeah. And I can see it now. It's it's going to be fun. A whole hour of critique will be good. That's the type of guest that you need on all the time from a added value standpoint as the host, right?
Humble cookie time, right? Is that what it is?
Yeah, absolutely. But I just want to give a props real quick, and this is completely personally related. My daughter had an event. She was attended a leadership class for her JROTC. And she was named number one of 65. She was the honor student for that event. So I had a big smile dad moment when her name was announced. So it was, she's running around here pretty much on a, you know how teenagers get when they have a little bit of a win, it goes to their head. So I'm trying to make her humble, but at the same time, my head swelled up pretty big too. So. Yeah, it was a full week event, and she did really well. So
that's great,
Todd. Anyway, Rick, congratulations on that forthcoming young one.
Thank you.
And boy, I'll be honest with you. I am glad I am done with diapers.
Yeah. I'm glad, too. Yeah, I had two, so they're all in their 20s now, so... So, been a long time for diapers for me.
So your busy schedule is going to get even busier. I just can't.
Yeah.
Yeah. But that's life. And again, it's something we're definitely looking forward to.
Outstanding.
Oh yeah. It's always exciting time.
Thank both of you guys. Thanks to you, for the well wishes. But also thank you guys for your support of the show over all these years. I mean, you both have been there, I think, since the very beginning.
Yeah.
We really, really appreciate it. So.
Well, and we're set to be on a panel at the expo. I'm gonna moderate the State of Podcasting in 2014 panel. So it's going to be exciting to talk about what's happening in the space there.
We can dig into the analytic data again and pull some gems out.
Yep.
So anyway, everyone else, thanks for being here. Thanks for watching. And again, we'll be back with you next Saturday at 9 a.m. Pacific time. And Rob and I want to thank Rick for coming out today. And until next time, everyone, take care. We'll see you.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Yeah. Thanks. Aloha. Bye.